not sure about that one. Yeah, no, I'm not sure. But what we have, what our responsibility that we have is that they need to bring the reports to us. And we can say, we think that you need to strengthen your plan here, or you need to, we do have that. That's what they, I think they take that as, you know, we approve or otherwise. We actually do have that function that, that we can play. So yes, that means that we have to deal with, you've got to locate it with all those responsibilities that we have. You can't go directly to the Higher Education Act or whatever. You deal with our financial responsibilities that this committee have throughout the year also. The chair is back now. I took the gap whilst he's not here. We can discuss it at the end. But I want this...
Okay, but I will not be here. But, you know, I just wanted to say that it would actually make us to transgress the separation of powers if we approve the strategic plans.
No,
we approve the budget, but not the plan. That's
no, I did say that. Can I hand over to the chair of the Health and Welfare CETA?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, and the Honourable Deputy Minister in absence here. Thank you for the opportunity to present our strategic plan and the annual performance plan of the Health and Welfare CETA. I am Dr. Confidence Muluko, the Chairperson of the Board of the Health and Welfare CETA. And the team that is here from the Health and Welfare CETA comprises of Ms. Fazila Fayez, who is a member of the board and EXCO of the HW CETA, the acting Chief Executive Officer and Chief Financial Officer, May Elaine Brass, Mr. Skumbuzo Kabashe, the Executive Research, Information Management and Evaluation, which we call RIME, and Meba Kedim Tubazi, the executive of the ETQA, which is the Executive of Education and Training Quality Assurance, and myself. The national economic sector for which the HWCTA is established is the health and social development sector. And the constituents of the sector are mainly labor and employer, but it also includes professional bodies. The key objective of the HWCTA is to facilitate, coordinate, and monitor the implementation of the National Skills Development Strategy. Its powers and functions are clearly articulated in the HWCTA Constitution. The HWCTA has got the national office, and it has got the provincial offices in all the provinces, with the exception of the Northwest, with the Free State and the Mpumalanga offices due for official logistics. We also have a presence in a number of technical and vocational education and training colleges. The strategic plan of the HWCTA and the annual performance plan have been, as it has already been mentioned by the first CETA, the CETA that was presenting, they have been approved. Our strategic plan and annual performance plan are a continuation of the work done in the past few years, with increased emphasis on animal health and rural development. Our strategic plan and APP have been evaluated and approved as compliant with general government policy, the policy of the Department of Higher Education and Training, the MTSF, and the National Development Plan 2030. On governance, we do have a competent board and the management structure. The board is in its second year, where all the members of the board are members of the Institute of Directors of South Africa. The HWC TA has got three successive clean audits. I will hand over to the CEO for her to go through the presentation of our strategic plan and the annual performance plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Moloko, and good morning to the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, as well as colleagues. It is our honour to present before you our strategic plan for the period under review. And the scene was already set by Dr. Moloko and the other CETA, the ETDP CETA. Our CETA caters for the workforce in health and social development. And I do apologise for the presentation not being on the board, but IT is going to arrive to assist with that. So in terms of the start point of our strategic plan is legislation. So we've mentioned the legislation that drives our strategy and annual performance plan. So for instance, it is the Skills Development Act as amended, the Skills Development Levies Act, as you heard quite a bit about this morning, SACWA, QCTO, PFMA and Treasury regulations, as well as the NSDS3. But there are other drivers of our strategy as well that has formulated this strategy. One is HR plans for the departments of both health and social development. We look at those plans and we engage with these departments. Research and evaluation reports and projects. Then we also look at the priorities of government and the Department of Higher Education and Training, the National Development Plan, regulations and policies from the statutory bodies in the sector, the medium-term expenditure framework, the human resource development strategy, the human resource for health 2030, and the pharmacy human resources for South Africa. So it is numerous drivers of our strategy. We have a well-established research division within the HWC TA, and they take all these drivers into account in the formulation of our sector skills plan. And it's really our sector skills plan that identifies our scarce and critical needs for our sector alone. And it is that plan that also drives our strategy and what we will be funding over the period. So the HWC TA strategy and annual performance plan strives to achieve the following impact. One is to establish a credible institutional mechanism for skills planning, increase accessibility to programs leading to intermediate and high level learning, increase access to occupationally directed programs, increase access to high level occupationally directed programs, and research, development, and innovation in human development. And this is what makes our mandate quite unique from that of other institutions, because we have a good research element, and the research element drives how we will satisfy the needs of our sector. Then the HWC TA Sector Skills Plan influences the strategic plan and APP. So the overarching skills development priority areas for the HWC TA in our plan include sustainable skills pipeline of skills into health and social development sectors, professionalism of the current workforce and new entrants into the sector, vital skills and skill sets required to enable employers to meet their obligations, provision of skills to NGOs, MPOs in rural and poor areas, and open up opportunities for the unemployed in non-traditional areas such as animal health, ocean economy, and a few other specialist areas. NGOs and MPOs play a very important role in our sector. However, these organizations struggle to attract and retain social services professionals. Many NGOs are exempt from paying skills development levies, and so their workers fall outside this CETA levy grant system for skills development. However, we do support these organizations. Unfortunately, the presentation is still not up, but what we wanted to show you is just from our APP and our strategy, some of the projects that we will be using to achieve these objectives. So first of all, we spend a lot of money on learnerships. And the other important funding areas are workplace experience and experiential learning, NGO and CBOs that we support and fund. We also support cooperatives, projects supporting public sector education and training, and percentage of graduates and artisans. And of course, we look to the percentage of graduate artisans and unemployment finding employment within 6 months. So these are some of our projects that we use to mobilize our strategy over the period. Most of our money does go into learnerships, and through our research and monitoring and evaluation, we have found it to be largely successful because it has a high element of workplace experience. So 30% of our learnerships is theory and 70% is practical experience. And we actually find that persons or learners going through our learnerships find employment at the end of the day. So it is our most successful type of funding we have. Then, of course, we also support internships and workplace experience learning. Internships is to help a learner gain the workplace experience to increase his probability of employment. Workplace experience learning is almost a new concept that has arisen over the last few years, and it's to actually assist learners in universities and TVET colleges to gain the experience in order to graduate from the program that they are currently in. So this is where employers can open up their doors to these type of learners. And then, of course, there are a number of other projects that we fund. Also workplace experience grants for TVET college learners, and it's usually over an 18-month period, and that also gives them a good probability of employment at the end of the day, or at least that they have the experience when they go and look for employment in the sector. We also, on the other hand, not only support funding into our sector, we also develop qualifications that are needed by our sector. So some of the qualifications that we have developed over the last period in line with the QCTO are social auxiliary worker, child and youth care worker, community development worker, I won't go through the whole list, but pharmacy technician assistant. Then we've got home-based carer, social security assessor, and we've also developed quite a few qualifications around religion. When we look at our learnerships, what we wanted to highlight to the portfolio committee is that we're very specific when we send out our expression of interest for learnerships. So first of all, we send it out to our employers. The HWC to fund employers, and then employers would then do the recruitment of learners, just as with the ETDP CETA. But we are quite specific with our employers. We actually indicate that 5% of their learners must be persons with disability. At least 85% of all learners funded must be black, and at least 54% of all learners must be women. And then we have asked them that all training on unemployed learners that they want to take up and use funding from the HWC to for, they have to offer employment to. And that is why our success rate on learnerships is very high. Learnerships for the last financial year, 1670 for unemployed, noting that it is unaudited, we spend 42.2 million and we're expecting to spend 131 million over the next 3 years on learnerships for employed. And now the type of learnerships that the HWCETA funds is nursing bridging, which is a 2-year course, advanced diploma in medical and surgical nursing, post basic diploma in midwifery, then pharmacist assistant, both the national certificate and the further education training certificate, social auxiliary worker, and child and youth care worker.
You may continue to read from this.
Thank you, Chair, and the presentation is up on the board. So those are the learnerships on the employed side. The learnerships on the unemployed side, it does cost a lot more money to fund unemployed learners. So we have, in the last financial year, funded 87.3 million for learnerships unemployed. And over the 3 years to 1920, we will fund 278 million in these learnerships. And they are the highest certificate in auxiliary nursing, the national certificate in pharmacist assistant, the further education training certificate in pharmacist assistant, social auxiliary worker, child and youth care, phlebotomy techniques over 2 years, and occupational certificate health promotion officer. If we have a look at the total budget now for discretionary grants over the 3-year period, 1.2 billion rand. Bursary support is also a big area for the HWCETA. As the ETDP CETA indicated, the investment on bursaries is often low. But we do understand the plight of the country at the moment relating to funding of bursaries. So the HWCETA has certainly come in to support this initiative. So over the last few years, we have supported bursaries. We do like to support final year students first as opposed to first, second and third year students, and that gives us a good return on our funds. What we actually do with the NASFAS is that we enter into a memorandum of understanding with them, and they need to provide us a list of students that they are funding, and these students need to comply with the conditions of NASFAS. And these students need to be studying in the field of social and health. So over the period, you will see that on unemployed, we are spending 167 million over the 3-year period on bursaries, and in total, 193 million. So the higher support on bursaries is for unemployed or students that are currently studying. And then we also support postgraduate bursaries. Now, we have also found that this has been highly successful because these are professional people. And we are currently entering into a space now where we can indicate what we would like them to research. And we use this research for the HWCETA to enhance our research to better service our sector. Over the 3-year period, we want to spend 21.5 million on postgraduate bursaries, and 8.6 million will be for unemployed. So we also thought it is important that the portfolio committee understands our situation as the HWCETA, our situational analysis, which we describe in quite a bit of detail in our strategic document. So first of all, the HWCETA is grappling with serious human resource and labour market challenges in the sector, as you know, nurses, social workers, doctors, etc. Employers that are participating in the levy grant system are 13,226 in the last financial year. So these are employers that actually contribute levies to us, and it excludes our government departments. The departments of health and social development contribute levies to the HWCETA. The HWCETA sector is made up of approximately 60% employers who are exempt from paying skills levy. So the mix of health and social development allows us to fund the social development sector. So most of our levies do come from the health sector. So due to the above, there is cross-subsidization between health and social development. Social work students funded through scholarship programs of the Department of Social Development are not being absorbed, and the HWCT is spending resources to give these professionals workplace experience. Planning from provincial departments has a negative effect on the HWCT, and of course we always ask the question whether social work is still a scarce skill. We have indicated that some of our challenges is vacant posts versus funded posts by government. So there appears to be vacant posts, but many of them are not funded. And this is the challenge that we currently face. So highlighting and taking out of our annual performance plan and strategic plan instead of going line by line, we would like to just highlight that we support occupationally directed programs with work integrated learning and practical training, and this makes it very successful, that practical element. We disperse funds to develop critical and scarce skills through bursary and learnership programs. We engage with employers to open their workplaces for training. We make available funding to produce work-ready graduates with day one skills. Support training and workplace learning of workers in vocational occupations. Support programs for improved service quality and enhanced consistency in service provision for health and welfare service centres. Enable the current workforce to upskill and bridge skills gap brought on by changes in the scope of practice or regulatory environment in professional occupations. So we do support skills training, and that's also an important element of a CETA. Then we also support skills formulation to improve leadership and management at all levels, particularly in the public sector. We enable the current workforce to upskill to meet norms and standards set for service provision. And we develop targeted public TVET colleges to offer sector occupational qualifications. A bit of a challenge at the moment, but we are trying our level best to make this successful. So perhaps also we are looking at possible collaboration with nursing colleges and where possible for teaching capacity. So also in our strategic plan, we also support lecturer development in TVET colleges. And also we support the quality of training, and that is also another area that is often overlooked in general, is that part of the mandate of the HWCTA is to accredit training providers. And if we do not have quality training from training providers, there starts a problem already at the grassroots. So indicators addressing priorities of youth, rural impact and employment is very important to the HWCT, and through our programs we ensure that we actually target these priorities. We have adopted a market-focused approach, ensuring return on investment as far as possible. We do have challenges in areas like we have mentioned, but we are very much focused on getting return on investment, and we have, as I've mentioned, a well-established research division in the HWCT, and they've actually produced a number of research reports on how well are we actually doing in certain of our projects and our funding. And some of our projects are very successful, and others there are gaps and challenges, and then in some others we actually may need to not consider them further. Work within the constraints of reality. If projects are not viable and suitable for the area, then they really have to be discontinued. Recognize the importance of good processes and cooperation. As Dr. Maloko has mentioned, good governance and integrity of strategic partners is of utmost importance to the HWCT. We look at ensuring that at least 60% of funded learners will be from rural areas. It is a focus of ours. We don't always achieve this, but it is certainly something that we strive to achieve. The HWCETA will enter into partnerships with industry employers, relevant government departments, NPOs and education institutions that advocate for the implementation of innovative ways of skilling the youth. We have to find new ways of actually bringing skills to the youth. And we've actually found a couple of partnerships, and we actually believe that one of the great successes of the NSDS3 is actually the partnership model. So these projects will be implemented in line with provincial growth and development strategies and rural development strategies. And then specific areas identified for implementation of projects, we've actually identified rural nodes and urban nodes, and these are mentioned on the slides. So we also wanted to say that even although there may be gaps or challenges in NSDS3, there are really some factors influencing good performance of the NSDS3. So one is the target setting and indicated description and interpretation. So you will see the detail contained in our strategic plans around this. And as we have mentioned, we are in full alignment with this. Then the incorporation of the partnership model versus the stewardship model. This has been a good factor in terms of the NSDS3, which we have subscribed to as the HWCETA. So the partnership model does go across all of our projects, and we really partner with the employers. So we also partner with TVET colleges. We've entered into MOUs with most of the TVET colleges, and we are working on that. It is a bit of a challenge at the moment for them to implement our qualifications, our programs as the HWCETA, but it's certainly an area that we are constantly working on. But at least we have the MOA in place, and we have a plan to do this. There's university-initiated projects, so work-integrated learning, and also very important in terms of our partnership with universities. We've had a number of universities that have lost accreditation, for instance, to offer the social work degree and course. And we have worked with these universities to regain their accreditation, because it is also very difficult for the HWCETA and other CETAs to actually fund a university where the program is actually not accredited. So we work with them to strengthen them. Then our oversight by governance structures is also contained in the NSDS3, and that has really strengthened the governance in general. Our governance at the HWCETA is very strong. And then there's also multi-party cooperation agreements with statutory bodies, councils, and universities. So very important, we work quite closely with the pharmacy council, with the nursing council, and this also strengthens what we do and how we do it, and to ensure that we've got quality training. Then our highlights for the previous 2 years, so that you can see where we've come from, which then sets the scene of where we are going to. In the 15-16 year, we achieved 98% of our targets. We committed our discretionary grant funding by 115%, and our commitment was 677 million rand. In this last financial year, unaudited, we've achieved 96% of our targets. We have committed 104% of our discretionary grant reserves, and we have 719 million in committed funds. Our high impact projects over the last period, just to highlight a few, is partnership with the Eastern Cape Department of Rural Development and Agrarian Reform to reactivate the Solo Agriculture and Rural Development Institute, called TARDI. We also funded students on animal health technician diploma accredited by the Veterinary Council. So we've done quite a lot of work in terms of animal health in the last 2 years. And it really has strengthened this sector. We've partnered with the Faculty of Veterinary Science at the University of Pretoria and TARDI for capacity building of TARDI to meet accreditation requirements from the South African Veterinary Council. We've partnered with Fort Cox and supported students in animal health. We've partnered with the Swiss South African Cooperative Initiative called SACI for training and placement of artisans, and we reported 71% placement within 2 months of certification. Another very successful project that we have. We've partnered with Netcare and Pathcare in placing TVET College students, most of whom came from the defunct National Certificate Vocational Primary Health Qualification. So we assisted the students that were trained on a qualification that almost led to nowhere. We've partnered with Alfred Nzor Development Agency for accredited skills program training 400 youth in animal health and the formulation of cooperatives in 4 municipalities that ANDA is serving. We've collaborated with government departments to roll out sign language training in health facilities to improve communication between practitioners and patients. Then some other projects that we have funded is the accelerated artisan development model, with 73% of students passing their trade tests on the first attempt and 71% gaining employment within 2 months of certification. Also a very good initiative. We have a success rate of assisting in excess of 80% of final year students to graduate in qualifications for health and social development sectors in partnering with NASFAS. We funded students in the Northern Cape in collaboration with the Office of the Premier on bursaries to go to university to attend community colleges and to become ECD practitioners. These were groundbreaking initiatives for this particular province. We funded the turnaround strategy for the Walter Sisulu University's Medical School and the Department of Social Work. The aim for the Department of Social Work is to regain accreditation with the SACSSP and the Higher Education Council and resume intake of new social work students. Also very important that we assisted them to do that. And then 1,955 students were placed in internships to meet the requirements of their professional registrations. And 243 masters and PhD students funded in groundbreaking research, one of which led to the registration of an indigenous medical or medicinal plant as intellectual property of a community in the Northern Cape. So these were what we are currently doing and our past successes, but it really is on a framework of good governance. And I won't go through each line on good governance, but really it lends itself, some of the success factors is leadership, having governance structures in place. So for instance, all these projects that you have heard about have gone through our Skills Development Committee, which is a subcommittee of the board. It then also goes to EXCO and the board. So even although it is in the strategy and the annual performance plan, it still goes through these structures within the HWCETA in translating the strategy into actual projects. Then also the executives and the board know the mandate of the CETA, and this allows us to give proper direction to our strategy. We also know the laws and regulations that govern our entity, which is very important in terms of being sustainable as an organization. We have policies, we have a strong internal control environment, we have proper systems in place, we have a strong monitoring and evaluation division, basically an internal audit division for our own projects. We have performance contracts for all our staff. A collective strive for excellence is what we look at the HWCETA, and we try and embed this in the culture. And then we've also got a strong, healthy relationship with the DHET, the Auditor General of South Africa, as well as stakeholders. But in amongst these successes, we also have found limitations in actually achieving more. And some of this is, of course, budget and inflation. capacity, both internal, our personnel capacity and resources, systems, and levy contributions from government. And there are some similarities between the HWCETA and the ETDPCETA on government departments and levies. Then some of our challenges we wanted to highlight to the committee in implementing the NSDS3 is the limitations of basic education impacting on the success in higher education. So this is one of the questions the committee had in the high failure rate in the first year of university. Then there's, of course, the downturn in economic conditions, reducing the ultimate impact of employment, something very well known to all of us. Employers not meeting conditions of funding. So why can't we move cash quicker? Well, we have conditions in place for funding. The ECDP indicated that they disperse funds in tranche payments. We do the same. And for every disbursement of a tranche payment, the employers need to meet a condition. And this is to safeguard the money that we have as an HWCETA. Then quality of training being compromised by unaccredited training providers. There are those training providers that are not offering quality training. The HWCETA has been criticized from time to time in not being flexible enough, but we've got strong policy in place to ensure that we can ensure quality training. Uneven participation across provinces and areas within provinces. It's really a focus area for us to ensure that there is good distribution of funds over all areas of South Africa and not only honed in specific areas. Significant amount of unfunded posts in government, I've mentioned that. So we are training, but there are no posts available. And the sector we are in, health and social development, we do rely on the posts provided by government. And then, we ask ourselves, are CETAs making a difference to the poorest and the poorest communities and rural areas? We ask this question all the time when we offer funding. And our board really look at this question and ensure that we go in the right direction. Then effectiveness of learnerships and internships, yes, we have to look at that. And then going into 2017 to 2020 period, we have to ask a few, there are considerations and focus areas. So the impact of our targets already achieved, so we are busy analyzing some of those impacts. Is the threshold for levy contribution low enough to capture the majority of employers in the sector? Innovation to improve on skills development, how to make a difference in the current economic climate, and there are a number of other considerations, Chair, but I actually won't go through the entire list. But of course, relevancy. Are we relevant as an HWC to make a significant impact in our country at the moment? And we are certainly making strides in that way. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much to the Health and Welfare CETA for the presentation on the Bobazoli.
Thank you very much.
Followed by Honourable Kikana, Honourable Kademing, and Van der Westhuizen. I don't know why I can never remember your surname. This is quite crazy. And Honourable, and the rest of the Honourables. Go for it, Honourable Bazoli.
Thank you very much. This is really a question to the department. I see the HWCETA has done its own skills plan, but when I asked the other CETA why they had to outsource the doing of a skills plan to a chair at a university, which is a very expensive thing, they said, no, they can't have researchers in the CETA and all that. So how come the CETA can do it? And in fact, I understood it's in the mandate of a CETA to do a sector skills plan. So it does go back again to the question I asked the other CETA. Why outsource something that is meant to be your job? But to ask the CETA itself about the skills plan, it was a really interesting plan, and thank you for sharing it with us. What is the relationship between your planning and the Department of Health human resources for health document, which I've looked at, which is much longer, much more detailed. Maybe you could just comment a little bit on the two documents and whether the Department of Health notices the planning you've done and makes use of it, because it does seem an extremely useful document. The second one is the same question I asked the ECDP, CETA, duplication. To what extent is what you're doing an elaboration and duplication of what other bodies should be doing? And to what extent are you offering something that is unique and is worth, you know, 400 million rand a year that you get? And then my last question is about the Nursing Council. I've had many complaints from various students in nursing colleges and stuff about the syllabus never having been endorsed by, I don't know whether it's QCTO or, anyway, the Quality Council has not endorsed the nursing qualifications, which has meant real problems in nursing training. Now, have you had that problem in financing your nursing, and maybe you could just comment on the situation with training of nurses. Thank you.
Just before I give Honourable Kika another opportunity, did you have a question, Honourable Killian? Because you wanted
Chairperson, just a brief question, and that was just in relation to what is the level of coordination, for instance, between the ET, DP CETA and the HW CETA. Is there any coordination? Because some of the scholarships, etc., actually touch on each other. If you look at the early childhood one, and you know, there are some of the health sciences that actually also touch in the social sphere. So is there any coordination there, and how do you manage that?
You may leave, Honourable Killian. Honourable Kikana.
Chair, the first one on the religion, I don't understand what support you're giving if you're a health CETA to religion. Is it perhaps priest that preach at hospitals? Or number two, you said there's a medical plant in the Transkei that you're supporting. I mean, a plant with medical character that you're supporting. Have you heard about the tea in Sikukuni land that has potential for creating agricultural opportunities for workers? They call it Ntibania. I heard it on Radio 70. I've been Radio SAFM for the whole week. They were advertising about it, asking for support. That is good. The third question, is there anything that you help to do in the medical school at the University of the North when it encountered problems last year? Now I hear they are resolved because it is under the umbrella of University of Pretoria. And then lastly, the nursing profession that you are assisting, are they mainstream in our hospital colleges, or are they the ones that are privately trained? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I just want to have clarity. You make mention that you also assist the social development, and given the fact that the social development is having some financial constraints, and then there are graduates that are not employed presently, now are you still giving bursaries to students? Even if the current situation is like that. The second one uncovered by Killian, I wanted to know about the collaboration between you and the ETDP CETA.
Thank you. Chairperson, I'm particularly interested in the support of unemployed learners. You know, one of our big challenges is to bring down the unemployment figures in our country. Now, you've said, and I accept that it's far more expensive to train unemployed learners, but if you could just perhaps assist, I'm particularly interested in how do you fund them? You know, do you use the trainer as a conduit for the funding? Do you fund them directly? And how do you ensure that the right learners are attracted, people that have the necessary background, the necessary interest and skills for working in the field of nursing? We've had a scheme here in the Western Cape where, for example, they wanted to train construction workers, but they insisted that 5% of the workers must be disabled. Now, eventually, we ended up with learners that you cannot put on high scaffolding and things like that. So what do you do to ensure that we're not training learners who eventually cannot, you know, enter the world of work? And then secondly, Chairperson, when I was involved with CITAS some 10 years ago, just after they were founded, a word which we often used was the word learnership. It was supposed to actually replace the old apprenticeship program, and it was a partnership between the employer, the trainer, and then the CITA as the funder of that. Yet that word seems to me as disappeared somewhat in the vocabulary, or has taken a far lesser role. Why? And are some of these things still being funded through learnerships, yet you're not using the term? What is the current position in that regard? Chair, and then lastly, you're sitting with the same challenge as the ETDP CETA, that many employees are government employees in your sector, and government is supposed to pay money over to the P CETA. I don't know if they still exist. And it seems now as if in the case of the ETDP CETA, they've got an agreement whereby various government departments are transferring money to them, but there are differences. Some pay 10% and some pay 30% of the 1% levy, I presume, is what those percentages refer to. What is the position in your case regarding that money stream? Where do you get that money from? And if you've said and I've missed it, thank you. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation and congratulations on achieving a clean audit. The first one, maybe I was also not listening carefully on page 4 where you are referring to qualifications supported. There are those numbers in brackets. I just wanted to know whether they are referring to learners supported or that it's something else. And then I have a concern that there are hospitals which continue to report dysfunctional equipment. I want to know how does the CETA ensure that these artisans are placed in hospitals to repair the equipment that is so needed, because I think that one is very important. Your visibility in provinces is a concern. Although we see that you are there, as we have reported, but we a bit concerned that even in the presentation, it's not clear where you are. It's not disaggregated per province, so it becomes clear for us to say in KZN this is so many learners that we have assisted as well as in that particular area. My last concern has been expressed by members on duplication because you're also dealing with training, where some could be, you know, worked together, collaborated with ETDP CETA. In fact, it goes back, honorable members, to the streamlining of CETA, what we have always been saying, that where we feel that this could be done by this CETA, you know, but when you were dealing with the entire thing, something different, you know, came up. But it means that CETAs really need to be streamlined, because we will always be reported on the same things that could have been done by a particular CETA. It's not assisting. It's just a duplication. Thank you so much.
Any other member? No? Those are the questions to yourself and to the department to answer. Can I start with the department this time?
Thanks very much, Chairperson and honorable members. Professor Bozoli was asking a very important question. In fact, this is what normally also Auditor General would ask in some of the core responsibilities of the CETAs, that we continue to outsource instead of insourcing. Also, especially this area of sector skills plan, because it's an area that is going to be there with CETAs, because it deals in the main with the research within that particular sector. So if therefore it's an area that is insourced, and all CETAs were encouraging them to insource this particular area, and building the capacity, of course, internally. So it's something that you are looking at, Professor, quite very closely. And then I must say, of course, other CETAs have been raising the issue that the lifespan of CETAs has been uncertain. Hence, I should think if we go to the proposition in the National Skills Development Plan with regard to the new CETA landscape, we almost are agreeing, the minds are meeting, on the element of permanency of the CETA system. But then, of course, not saying that from time to time that might not be reviewed, because at least now the country is having long-term plan in terms of our national development plan and other strategic policies of government. So there is no way, therefore, you can be having CETAs being licensed and established and re-established each and every 5 years. And I must say, I know one of the chairperson of the CETA was asking a very important question to me yesterday about the appointment of the CEOs, saying the current lifespan is up until 31st March 2018. So what is going to happen if they appoint a CEO maybe 2 months before that period, 31st March 2018? But then, of course, the answer to me was quite very affirmative. In terms of the regulation, it's quite very clear in saying if we are appointing a CEO or we are appointing any other person for that matter, that is going to be up until that period of 31st March 2018, because that is what currently is legislated. And we always would wish to act intra vires, not ultra vires, so that we are not being found wanting by the Auditor General. But then, Prof, is an area that we are working quite very closely to it. And then also I'm happy to say the capacity of the department in terms of the research itself, because the department itself must be able to coordinate research. So that capacity we are incrementally developing within DHET, not within the skills branch of the department, because there is a lot of work that will be done or is being done. And the case in point, for example, now we are also developing the list of those occupations that are high in demand. You are no longer outsourcing that responsibility. And you recall the last list we published on the 19th January 2015, and now we're preparing to, or that was 2016, now we are preparing to publish another list. That work is being done internally. So also with CITAS, and we realized that the sooner the better we finalize this process of the National Skills Development Plan, as well as the new CITAS landscape, there will be a lot of certainty within the CITAS system itself. The question of coordination, I know is being raised time and again, and it's an issue that is going to be with us for some time. As a department, we need to intervene quite very decisively in that area. Tomorrow, amongst others, there is this big colloquium, it's an international colloquium, that is going to be held in Beechwood Hotel, whereby we are looking into the coordination of not only CITAS as an entities of the department, but the whole post-school education and training system, because we must be able to respond with the necessary velocity as the department with regard to dealing with all these issues that are being raised. So that is going to be taking place tomorrow, and we have invited a series of speakers, guests from various, even internationally, to come so that we can be able to deal with issues of developing in any way a policy, a regulatory framework for a collaboration, for interaction, for coordination. And then I must say internally, within the department, we do have other measures. But then, of course, what is coming quite very clear is that those measures that we do have internally are not that sufficient. Because, for example, we're looking into CITAS. Normally, minister would have his own meetings with all the CITAS chairpersons, trying to also look into transversal issues whereby there should be not duplication in some of the things. And also, we normally CITAS officials with CEOs, all grade one CEOs, trying to deal also with areas of duplication. But then I know the fact that if we go back to the National Skills Development Plan, all these issues, we're trying to raise the bar there so that we are coming up with a system that is going to be more efficient, that is going to be more effective, a system that is going to be also economic when we are using especially the state resources. So I think those were the areas, Chairperson, not unless there are some areas that I'm just missing, I'm missing them out. I can be reminded. Thanks very much.
Will you deal with the nursing council issue, or isn't that the department?
Yeah, thank you very much, the Honourable Chairperson. The Health and Welfare CITAS and the Department of Higher Education and Training and the Nursing Council has had a number of meetings over issues that that are common. And this leads me to answering a question that was asked directly. I don't remember whether it was Honourable Bozoli that was asking as to whether are there any courses that are, that might have been done or that might have been implemented which were not necessarily approved. The question there provides an opportunity for us as the HWC and also the DHET to bring it to the attention of the portfolio committee that there have been instances where there have been at least one instance where there is a course that was implemented which was not necessarily approved. You should not be surprised to see any news around what you call is the NCV. Yeah, NCV Health. It's in healthcare. We had a meeting of the Minister of Health, the Minister of Education and Training, together with the officials, on the 4th of July, I think it was 2016, where the ministers have instructed that that issue be resolved and that the department has to see to it that whenever there are approvals of courses, either by the department or by the nursing council, that have got implications on the functioning of the Department of Education and Training and Health, that the ministries have got to have the final say on those courses. not only be approved by officials, but be approved with the knowledge of the various ministries. There was a question that was asked about the issue of duplication. It is a fact that there's some work that is being done between the sitters that amounts to duplication. But that matter has been very seriously, is being very seriously dealt with, even during this time when we are busy with the serious discussions around the changing sitter landscape. The chairpersons of the boards of all the sitters have coordinated themselves into an informal forum of chairpersons of the boards of all the sitters. And they meet together with a forum of all the CEOs of all the sitters. And we hope that we are dealing with this matter, and this will be reported to the Department of Education and Training, and hopefully the results of the work of coordination as we are going towards 2020 will be able to reach this august body, namely the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training. The question that was asked by Honorable Kekana around the issue of the plant in Skukuneland, it is only now that we are hearing about it, and we will note that and see as to whether it falls within the mandate of the HWCT. And we will note that, and we'll be able to report back to the Portfolio Committee. The issue of the medical school in Limpopo. The problems around the medical school in Limpopo were mainly around the issue of accreditation. Portfolio Committee, the attention of the Portfolio Committee is brought the attention about Limpopo is brought to you that the Limpopo the medical school was supposed to have been opened in 2015. For a number of reasons, they were not able to meet the criteria for accreditation. They were accredited, they opened for 1 year, and that accreditation did fall off. But there have been there's been quite a lot of work that has taken place between the national departments and the University of Limpopo. And even if we have not, as the HWCT, got involved directly, I am aware that some kind of resolution is being reached, and we hope that that accreditation will be restored when the Council of Higher Education and Training, the Health Professions Council, will be satisfied that what needed to be done has been done. It is not the issue that was directly affecting or that that was directly in line with the mandate of the HWCT. But as the HWCT, we do have interest in what happens in the universities, just like what is happening in the colleges. Some of the questions we will distribute them between the executives and the member of the EXCO who are here. We would note also, I just like to note concerns that have been raised about communication with people at the provincial level by Honorable Kulu, that the HWCT seems not to be very visible. We have had very regular roving meetings in the various provinces where we have had stakeholder engagements. And those stakeholders engagements were well publicized. But the point that you are making, we are noting it, and we hope that we will be able to respond positively so that the situation improves. Thank you very much. I'll hand over to Ms. CEO.
Thank you, Chair. What I would like to address first is what uniqueness does the HWC to bring that maybe other organizations actually don't also do in terms of the duplication of effort? And with the HWC, our focus is largely on mid-level skills, which some other institutions would not focus on. And our focus is also on our sector. So we research our sector, we have a look at the skills and needs of our particular sector, the scarce and critical needs of our sector, and we take care of that. So it is one body just looking at social and health sector. What we do that is unique is our research, and there is strength in that. We also do planning and monitoring, which other institutions would not do, and this is specific to our sector as well. Our strength is partnerships with TVETs, government departments and other organizations. We look at skills development, in particular for employers. So they are the levy payers, and we also give back to them. Our strength is in workplace experiential learning, internships, learnerships, and bursaries specifically for our sector, as well as ad hoc projects. And that is what we do that is unique to a CETA. Relating to the coordination, if any, between the HWC and other CETAs, besides what Dr. Moloko has indicated, is that we are in a new era where we have identified that collaboration is very important, specifically with CETAs. So even although in the past we've had a bit of collaboration with CETAs, the time has come to actually strengthen this. And we will certainly work with other CETAs. And as the Department of Higher Education and Training has indicated, is that they will look at the NSDS3 and have a look to ensure to reduce any kind of duplication and increase collaboration. The nursing profession, to add on what Dr. Moloko has already added, is that yes, we do look at both mainstream and privately trained. So our training or the support of bursaries relating to nursing, or where we support the learnerships in bridging for nursing, is both for mainstream and private. The social development support on social workers. Here, again, we support social workers through bursaries, because when we give funding to the NSFAS, we ask them to specifically look for funding of students in our sector, and one of which would definitely be social workers. However, we have also focused a lot on the social auxiliary worker, so not just the social worker, although the social worker is still a scarce and critical need in our country, especially in relation to legislation that is currently there. Support of unemployed learners. Well, we fund the employers directly, so we ask them to take a lot of accountability and responsibility of the learners that they recruit and the learners that are funded. So we pay the employer, and the employer then gets a training provider to train learners. Part of the training of unemployed learners is the probability of employment. And in fact, we ask between 80 and 100% employment of these learners. So we have found when we introduced this in our policy that before the introduction of this, we actually found that employers would apply for a lot of funding for a significant amount of learners. Then when we said, well, for every learner that you fund and train, you need to employ, then we found that they were more cautious. And so the responsibility is on the employer to ensure that they get the right learner. It's not always perfect, and we do have dropouts, but we have found that in essence, the learnership model, for example, is actually quite successful by and large. Persons with disability, yes, we can cater for them in our sector. I do understand that some sectors it's not really possible. We actually do have board members on our board that actually support the sector. So it is very important to the HWC that we give our full support around persons with disabilities. And perhaps the use of learnership may have changed over the period, but the use of a learnership now is in fact enshrined with good return on investment. So the learnerships we are talking about is almost equivalent also to artisans. It's this, almost the same type of model where you have theory, but you have a large element of practice. So the learnerships we are talking about is the 30% theory, the 70% practice, and we have found that to be successful because these learners are work ready. And largely from our research and our monitoring and evaluation that we have done is that these learners are work ready. And it's the same with artisans. We have over 70% take on in employment after the artisans have got their certification. We support unemployed learners with the funding that we give to the employer. It covers both training. It'll cover uniforms if uniforms are needed, as well as stipends and in some instances books. So that's how we also support those unemployed learners financially. With regards to government employees, government employers and the revenue, yes, we are reliant on the revenue from government departments. We have seen over the last 9-10 years that certainly we get contributions. So even although the legislation says that they may contribute to us, they certainly have. Not all 9 provincial departments have contributed, and in some years we have a better year than others. But this year we've had an exceptionally good year. Where the problem has come is in 2013 with the cabinet circular that increased the contribution from these departments from 10% to 30%, we have found that departments have struggled. But we have encouraged them. We have also tried to be flexible and understanding, although we have also indicated that it is a cabinet circular that is in place and that they should comply. But we have tried to meet them halfway. Some departments pass in 4 tranches over the year and so forth. There are some provinces that are poor payers, like Mpumalanga, Limpopo. We just don't really get anything from them. But it hasn't resulted in any kind of going concern issue for the HWC term. The HWC term, being good stewards of our money, we also have surpluses from administration because of cost containment, and we're very cautious in how we spend. So we are not 100% reliant on the government levy. What is disappointing for us is we would like to give more back to the government departments. So because they pay levies to us, they can also participate in our discretionary grant funding, and they are not doing enough of that. In terms of the qualifications supported, that slide I had, and I just want to quickly go there, and it is a bit misleading, so my apologies for that. I've just gone past it. There we go. It really relates to the NQF level, if I'm correct. So it's not the number of learners, it's the NQF level. And then while I'm on that, I would like to talk about some of the religious qualifications that we have that we've just developed in the last year. And I'd like Jane to pop in here, because I know it sounds strange as a health and welfare sector education, where does religion come in? But Jane will actually place it nicely for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. As far as religion is concerned, it does fall under the health and welfare sector, because we are dealing with social welfare issues. So it's directly related to what we do, and our main mandate that does include religion as well. Now, yes, we did develop religious occupational qualifications with the QCTO, and those religious qualifications have now included all the religious denominations, like your Christian, your Muslim, your Jewish, your all those denominations that we have in South Africa have been now accommodated, and those qualifications are now with QCTO, and they will be sent to SAQWA for registration. Thank you.
The question is, what do you teach? Genesis, Exodus, what is it that you teach?
Thank you, Chair. The qualification deals with all your religious issues, like your pastoral issues and all that. So we train the pastors to be able to service their sector. So the qualifications are dealing mainly with issues in the religious sector. But the AWCETA is our mandate. We assist the sector to develop qualifications that are related to what they do. Hence, I started with saying religion falls under our mandate because we are dealing with social issues. Thank you, Chair.
So when they tell the congregants to eat snakes, it's you that teach them?
Chair, unfortunately, it's not in the curriculum, so obviously it won't be covered. Thank you, Chair.
You want to round off?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to say that in an extra one of the constitution of the HWCETA, under the scope of coverage, it does list the scope of coverage as determined by the minister, and lists that in the table. Under 93.400, it says that our scope of coverage is described as religious institutions, grief counseling, working with the dying, and hospices. Thank you.
Chair, there's just one more question that we need to deal with, and that is the HR plan for health and the alignment to the strategic plan of the HWCETA. And then I'd like Skombusu to come in here. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, members. In terms of the coordination between ourselves and the Department of Health, we do look at their human resource for health document. But some of the statistics are old, and it's not being updated on an annual basis. The uniqueness of the CETAs in the environment, the workplace skills plan is the only document that is current, and it's updated annually. So the HWCETA has that information from the private sector and also from the government sector, because we go to PCETA and extract the WSP and match it with the WSPs of private sector to give a perspective on the whole health sector as a whole. And our statistics are updated on an annual basis. That's why you find a difference between what we say and what the Department of Health says. With respect to the coordination between ourselves and the ETDP CETA, the Department of Higher Education and Training has got cluster sessions. They've clustered the CETAs into about 5 clusters, and we sit in the 5th cluster with ETDP CETA, LG CETA, SAS CETA, and the other CETAs that are operating in the same environment. And we look at our research reports and what is coming out of our WSPs. And that's where you'll find that when we say we need ECD practitioners, the ETDP CETA will say the same thing because of the coordination that we have. The coordination with the LG CETA, for instance, there are other metros that have got health facilities. So they will need nurses. So nurses are sitting with the nursing council. So the funding also goes along those lines. In terms of the qualifications themselves, ECD practitioner qualifications are sitting with the LG CETA, sorry, with the ETDP CETA, but some of the funding actually comes from us when employers request the funding for ECD practitioners. So there is that coordination that happens at cluster level with the ETDP CETA and the other CETAs within the social cluster. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think you're through with answering all the questions. Honourable members, I trust all your questions have been answered. You would agree with me that we thank the CETA for an extremely insightful presentation that you have made here. And we trust that our engagement with you has benefited the CETA also. Was there anything else from the department that you wish to say?
No injunction, Chairperson.
Excuse me?
Nothing, Chairperson.
I'm closing the meeting, Honorable Kikana.
Yeah, not sure I agree, but I think I personally want to extend an apology to Dr. Mloko, because the last time they were here, you remember when I was standing in for you, and they came here, and there was a debate whether they must present, but the portfolio felt they were not on the agenda. So just for them for being here from Pretoria, only to find they can't do a presentation, I think we should apologize. And hopefully next time this won't repeat itself.
He accepts the apology and appreciates the fact that the portfolio committee made up by inviting them today. Is that correct, Dr. Maloka? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I am afraid that's how far we can get. And this does bring our meeting to a close. May I thank all of you for your participation. This meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone.